Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Your favorite Sonic character? Yeah.
I mean, I always like Knuckles. Mm. I always like Knuckles.
I'm a big Knuckles
because he's basically Sonic Wolverine, right?
I never thought of it that way.
I like him because he's idiot Sonic.
Yeah. He's a bit sharper now. It was like he was big dumb guy in Sonic Boom,
yeah.
Which is low key the most overlooked Sonic thing
more
ever.
Himbo in the TV Sonic
show. Definitely.
Kind of.
Yeah.
The TV show is genuinely awesome though. Like they absolutely nailed the characterizations and everything. And this is the intro to the podcast. I should say, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Hello.
And joined by Ewan Patterson.
I did not know that Sonic opinions that I would share would be taken down and shared with the public. I don't feel comfortable with that.
That's fine. I can delete the intro to this podcast if you so wish. We will listen back to the legal tape and go from there. But I feel like if you whisper Sonic, there's an army of people, including myself, ready to dive in and talk about the nuances, the lore of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Many layers.
You scare me.
Yeah, we should. But still, speaking of being scared, 2023 is coming to a close and we thought, why not do a wrap-up style podcast where we've each got three talking points that we're going to bring up. It could be questions, it could be statements, there could be things to touch on from the year overall, the year in gaming. I'll open because I think, and we're going to go around the room, we've each got three things to get to. My first thing was the continuation of very, very small games taking off, the idea that graphics just don't matter anymore, which is something that I've been saying for a while. I feel like production budgets get the money gets spent in the wrong place. And I feel like this year, I don't know if either of you have seen Lethal Company and how much that game's blown up.
Yes.
I feel like that continued the trend that the likes of Fall Guys and Among Us did, where it's like a game that is made for ostensibly a shoestring budget. You can talk about the reality of, you know, they're in early access and they get patched over time to get to what would be a console quality level or whatever. But I feel like up against we're probably going to talk about layoffs, overall going forward. But the amount of layoffs that there have been this year, the amount of projects that didn't land, the sales that didn't come through, projects like the Lamplighters League that like the studio knew just before launch that it wasn't even going to work. They had to shut down.
I really wanted to play that game and it's an Xbox thing, so I can't play it.
Yeah, it's actually like really solid. Like it's on Game Pass. Like if you want to go check it out while you can. But still, I feel like overall we're approaching the glass, approaching the glass ceiling on game development production, like in terms of where that budget goes. And I just keep seeing, it's probably just algorithmic because I'm always talking about this and I'm looking at posts, I'm liking posts on social media that reflect this, but I keep seeing things where it's like, you know, I'd rather have gameplay variety than accurate skin textures or accurate pores in the skin or like the eyes, pupils dilate when there's light. I never care about any of that stuff. I'm curious where either of you are and whether like you think the likes of Lethal Company point to a reality where you could have a bigger gameplay variety and spend the money on that instead.
I don't know. I'd like to think so, but it does
agree with
like,
me, Si.
Okay, yes. like it is nice that this has become kind of a trend. There every few years, like a little game that nobody expects really blows up, and they tend to be passion project things, like you say, that one or two people have made, like Among Us, like Lethal Company. I expect, and it is just all about the fun. I play this with my friends because it's fun, and that's it's no more complicated than that. That's as simple as it gets to be, and it's always nice, isn't it? I don't know if it's going to be a trend of them happening more, but I like that we do have those like experiences of like, didn't expect that coming, and it's the most unexpected, unassuming thing that suddenly everyone's talking about. I've not played Lethal Company yet, but I need to get in on it because everyone's talking about it.
I haven't got a gaming PC. I've got a Mac, which is just like, if you say the word game around it, it'll explode. Like, it's not going to get there.
You could maybe. I don't know.
I remember trying to get in on the Mac gaming scene when I got my laptop like a few years ago, and I tried to run Brutal Legend. legend in that way. It ran it at like 3 frames a second. It just would not handle
those
it.
Those tasty 3 frames.
I know. Those 3 frames. Were they a good 3 frames? Oh, they were rendered really well. Like if you took a screenshot, it looked gorgeous, but it couldn't run very smoothly. Ewan, thoughts on production level?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with you that this has been the year that everyone has kind of woken up and then looked at like, okay, this is the cost of video game development. This is how long it's taking for games to get made. There was that really good Jason Schreier report earlier in the year where he mentioned that, you know, we're already getting developers who are starting games right now that are going to be on the next generation of consoles, you know, looking like 7-8 years ahead on a project that you are starting, which was simply never the case back in the day. It is interesting. I think there is definitely a conversation that needs to be had there about, like, you know, if we're going to start embark on a project right now, can we be certain that in 7 or 8 years' time, it's still going to be relevant?
Yeah,
looking at something like Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, which feels very much of the, you know, Fortnite mold, kind of like leaning into live service elements, even if it is a live service game, and that kind of looking like it's going to land with a bit of a wet fart next year. Like that's kind of one thing that has definitely been apparent to me. The thing I would say is that I definitely am here for that level of arty-farty technical fidelity and detail when it makes sense. Like Red Dead Redemption 2, I kind of think the horse ball shrinkage adds to that game's immersion. Not that I would have ever noticed it if no one had pointed it out to me.
Horse ball shrinkage, kind of.
But I think that is an example of where, okay, if you're leading to an immersive level of quality, you want to make your game kind of pseudo-realistic and, you know, really kind of like cinematic, then I guess it makes sense there. Although I do agree with you, we need more experiences like Lethal Company where we're looking at, you know, putting, not that gameplay isn't put first with these other games, but sort of looking at it and going, when does it make sense? When is it appropriate? I think the reason why Lethal Weapon, Among Us, I forget there was another example that you may have given as well.
Fall Guys.
I think the reason why those games are so successful is because they hinge on developing little meta narratives for players when they're in multiplayer. Like the reason why Lethal Company, I wanted to say Lethal Weapon for a second then. The reason why those games are taken off is because you have so many shareable moments where you can rely on
very streamer friendly
chat,
space for you to find what you want to
do. Yeah, lots of like inherent little mini quality. And again, I think I'll fly the flag for VoIP. I love like just prox chat in games. I've gone on about it so many times. How Hell Let Loose is hilarious because I'll be a medic and I'll be reviving someone and I'll hear someone screaming in the distance going, "Medic, I don't want to die." And I go over and then they get turned into goo by a German grenade and I'm covered in blood and I'm like, "Ugh." It's really funny in context. It sounds quite disturbing out of context. But it's also the same reason why Lethal Company looks so much fun. It's because you can literally be in a hallway and you can be like, look at a big scary monster and go, nope. And someone will hear you go, nope. Like in the distance. Right. And then they'll come over and investigate you. So they're like, nope. Yeah. Turn around. Because that
was
like that.
What was
great.
The name? There's another one. I'm going to forget the name of it. But there was a ghost hunting game.
Phasmophobia.
Yes.
I was literally just about to say, big Phasmophobia vibes with that. That's a great example of like VoIP stuff.
Because that, like, yeah. Like you
and
have to,
kind of, also weirdly, kind of an ugly game, but fun. Just fun.
Like, and it's so. it's obviously it's worthwhile saying that the likes of Red Dead Redemption 2 probably wouldn't have worked to the degree that it did if it looked more like, you know, if it had a reduced fidelity or whatever. It does. It depends on committing to a certain vision. I'm not saying that you just get rid of good graphics altogether. I think that, you know, like GTA 6 looks absolutely gorgeous and that's part of why it looks brilliant or why it comes across so well. But at the same time, if you had I've said this loads, but if you had the likes of a Rockstar or Naughty Dog or a certain wing, like the Ubi Art program that they had back in 2014 and 15 and 16, I love the idea of a bigger team going like, we're actually going to take just a handful of devs, like maybe like one of the art directors while we're waiting on some of the portion coming together, which is what happened with the Last of Us remake, Last of Us Part 1 remake. It was like we needed something to do while the rest of the team planned, assumedly Last of Us 3. If Rockstar, if they put their stamp on, we've done a smaller game, I think that's fascinating and I want to see what ideas they come up with when it's in a smaller time frame.
I completely agree. The interesting question that I keep coming back to now, and it's something I keep talking to my cousin about when I play games with him, is that like the idea of maybe, were we happy with the level of graphical fidelity that was there like 6, 7, 8 years ago?
This was a tweet that was doing the rounds a couple of days ago,
Would we, when we're looking at like realistic-esque looking games, were we fine in a place that we were at that point? And would that mean, you know, we get more games as a result? Or are we still wanting to push forward? Because again, like to mention Mad Max again, I've been going through Mad Max the first time that game came out in 2015.
Love that game.
It's not the best looking game of 2015. There were better looking games at the time. And I would say that, you know, looking at it, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I do kind of miss performance mode. I do kind of miss the higher frame rates. I do kind of miss some of these, you know, new lighting advancements that we've made. So it's a tricky conversation, but I definitely think there is a broader conversation, and I don't know if the solution is there yet on like the protracted length of video game development and whether our constant strive for Because if we don't do that, then the entire House of Cards comes collapsing down. We don't have a need for new consoles. We don't have a need for, like, you know, better, like, software to actually, like, make better graphics and stuff. So there's all sorts of stuff going on with there.
I think you can put all that horsepower into something other than aesthetics. But at the same time, you could have the likes of Hi-Fi Rush. You could have all these more individual-looking games.
Yes, absolutely.
The interesting thing with Mad Max, and it's not going to work for lots of older games, but Mad Max in particular, if you play it on Series X, has all the auto-upgrade stuff. And they added HDR. It runs it up to 120 frames a second. And like they did do all the up-res stuff. So in that case, it's like if you want to go back to an older game, like the console kind of does the up-res part for you without the developer needing to re-render those facial models and things like that. But that is interesting of like, because I keep seeing people share pictures from like Silent Hill 3 of the face models as they were in Silent Hill and say like, oh, this totally worked back in the day. And the idea that our imaginations filled in the specific lip movements or whatever, the level of fidelity that something like a Naughty Dog production would have now, our minds kind of just made that work when we played older games anyway, to some degree, unless the facial animation was notably bad. And that's kind of like a conversation of like, how lifelike does it need to be? How much were those original games trying to be lifelike and that was just as much as they could do? Or does the rendering tech, the horsepower, everything else go into coming up with some sort of genre or gameplay mechanic or rendering approach that we just couldn't do before? I remember at the start of the generation, there was all this stuff about the SSD tech, about how that would change level layouts and everything, because you wouldn't have to have a corridor between two big areas anymore.
Not to squeeze through.
Yeah, no more squeeze throughs. And like, thankfully, like this, hardly any squeeze throughs. I'm glad they're going away. But I feel like overall, we've not really seen that push for like, this is what technology can do on a completely gameplay level.
Yeah.
Cocoon's a really good example. It's more of like in the indie space. But in that game, you are like squeezing entire biomes and you sort of push them into like marbles essentially and then hold them and then you blow them back out again and step back inside them.
Awesome.
And it's like a really cool visual effect. And it's like Viewfinder has that whole thing where you take a photo and then it becomes 3D. And I'm like, they're really sick rendering ideas that like pure aesthetic improvements wouldn't even be thinking about because we need to make it shinier.
To be fair, Spider-Man 2 does have a good one with
at the beginning.
I was more thinking the fast travel when you're looking down on the map and you're like, I want a fast travel here. The way it zooms into the map and you're suddenly, that's a good example of SSD being done.
And why you need a new console for it. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. That's an example of like, this is what the generation is for, but we're halfway through the generation.
Yeah. And it's, but that's more indicative of what I want to see because I think as soon as people saw that fast travel thing, it was like, oh, okay, this couldn't be done on a PS4. Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
As opposed to just, it looks a bit shinier kind of thing.
I'm going to go with a negative one, and you've mentioned it off the top, really, which is layoffs.
Yeah.
We have to talk about the layoffs.
Yep.
It's the most, when you take away the actual games themselves from the gaming industry, it's the story of the year, the layoffs.
By far.
And it's just been almost non-stop. Like, every time you think, okay, that must be it, we literally got some 2 days ago?
Had Free Radical calling, just
3 days
down,
ago, yeah. Where that's it, the Time Splitters team are done, Embracer of, and I think they might be, you know, taking the gold trophy for layoffs this year.
They've
realized that maybe we shouldn't have bought everything.
A deal that wasn't even in place yet.
The whole Embracer story, like, this is a whole other thing where it was like, who are these guys? They come out of nowhere, they bought loads of people, they don't know what, clearly, do they know what they're doing? Clearly no, because they've spent the entire year just getting rid of everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's terrible and we shouldn't be forgotten in a year of good games that behind these good games are hardworking people, and even it's starting to feel like there is no such thing as job security. Like, anybody could be up for it. It must be very, very scary. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that there isn't more protections in place, and more than that, just more people in the industry talking about it and holding people to it, like businesses to a certain standard, like the Game Awards. I know everyone's pointed it out, but there's no mention of it there.
No.
And it felt kind of icky.
I think one of the biggest failings of the Game Awards, because this year's one was very negatively received, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest failings of that whole show could have been celebrating the people who put their time into making those games. Like I forget the name of the website that's been tracking it the whole time, but I know the number is now over 10,000.
I think it might be as simple as videogamelayoffs.com or something like that. But
yeah, and it's like, the overall number of people that have lost their jobs is over 10,000 now, and it was 6,000 back in October. It feels like October and November were the two specific months where it was every single day. There was another story about more layoffs, and it's always just the inhumane way it's handled, where someone gets an email on the morning, or they read about it on the news or something. Like, they're not even being told that much ahead of time. The only reason that the Free Radical one came out ahead of time was specifically because of UK law. Like, in the UK, you have to give people a month's notice, that happened a bit more in advance.
But even then, the example there sucks because it's like 2 weeks before Christmas.
Yo, totally,
which is terrible. You shouldn't do that.
Literally, like. high tier Ebenezer Scrooging. For sure. But even Scrooge didn't lay off his employees before Christmas.
It's just I think that I'll be fascinated by, and I need people with way more access than me or whatever to dive into the reality of how we got here. Like, a lot of the stuff I was watching, Play Watch Listen, which is Lana Pearson, Mike Bithell, and Austin Wintory talking about it, and the podcast. And obviously from Mike Bithell's point of view, he's like an indie dev. He was talking about the reality of just how many land grabs were made across the pandemic, where it's like, well, everyone's at home, we've got all this time to play. Mm-hmm. And obviously the amount of spending went up across the industry. So a lot of publishers then hired because of that, not really acknowledging what the following years were going to be. And this is ostensibly the reality of that, that it just wasn't really planned out past that idea of let's capitalize on the amount of people at home. And you can literally put a number on it. It seems like that overspend was 10,000 people big.
But the ridiculousness of this all is that this is the most profitable like entertainment medium on the globe.
Yep.
And a lot of the studios where these layoffs are happening, they've recorded like record profits.
Yes. Yeah. Also the Free Radical one, the CEO guy, his wage went up or something. It stayed consistent.
It feels like the banker's bonuses thing from years ago. It feels like a similar level of greed. And we're talking about like gaming, the sustainability of game development and like long dev cycles and stuff. And I totally understand those as concerns, but I think at the same time, the industry is still profitable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it should be able to support like these people. It's kind of mad to me, like 10,000 people in 1 year, that is a hefty chunk.
Uh-huh.
That is a really staggering chunk, especially given how, I don't know, like it is staggering to me.
No, I was just going to throw in that it was something like 4% or 10% of the overall amount of people working on games will let go this year. It was a pretty chunky number. But yeah, just horrific. I mean, like, and also like, you know, this also, it springboards off the ongoing conversation around crunch and general approach. Mm-hmm. How do we even make these games in the first place? And the idea of the amount of different developers who cycle through staff, and then they need to be trained, and then that takes so much time. And just that idea that, you know, it's something that various developers joke about, that like nobody knows how to make a game. Like, it'll come together at the end. There are different ways, different game engines and everything else. And I remember back when, it was when Halo 2 was being made, but Bungie referred to it as leaping out of a plane with a needle and thread and stitching the parachute on the way down. And you'll either get it or you'll hit the ground. And it seems like it's still the same, like 20 years later, with this many people being attached to it now. But yeah, just a huge shame. I think that a lot more could have been done at the Game Awards to shout that stuff out. And it is just a shame. But like, yeah, hopefully that those people can still be proud of the games that they put out. But it's massively sucks the sheer amount of people that sadly lost their jobs this year. You and your talking point, please.
I'll skew in a little bit more of a positive direction right now. Not that the sad stuff isn't worth highlighting, because it absolutely is. But I think for me, this year was a year of pleasant gaming surprises. Nice. I kind of thought this was going to be a quiet gaming year for me. The games that I were looking forward to, I kind of like were fatigued on the wider franchise implications. So going in a few years back, if you told me that I'd be getting a new Star Wars game and a new Spider-Man game in a set amount of year, I'd been like, I'm so there, I'm so excited.
Yeah, yeah.
But we live in a current time where Star Wars is being cheapened by the Disney machine, and Marvel is kind of, again, I've spent so many years with superheroes in my entire life, I'm kind of on the edge.
It's
of
all
like,
just so exhausted.
I can put them in my peripheral vision or whatever. Yeah. And also like licensed games and stuff. But yeah, so Jedi Survivor completely blew me away. I was not expecting that game to be as good as it was.
Same.
I liked Fallen Order, but I didn't love it. And then this came around and pretty much addressed every single concern I had with that game, bar some technical quandaries, which I know, Scott, you mentioned
quite regularly. And
I did have a hilarious one with the old Dirge stand-in where he's the whole death thing and he just started buzzing around the screen. It was really, really bad. But yeah, no, I think it's been a year of pleasant gaming surprises for me. If 2021 and 2022 were years of like me falling back in love with games and trying new experiences like Hades and like Elden Ring, then 2023 has been kind of like a pleasant casual year of gaming.
Nice.
Where like I got to experience some new things that I hadn't really gotten involved in the hype machine for. And that goes to Spider-Man 2 as well. I was always looking forward to that, but never like a massive thing. And I came away from those experience really, really pleasantly surprised. And again, RoboCop as well. I was expecting a RoboCop game to completely miss the point of Verhoeven's text and to just be instead of looking at this, like, you know, great look at like fascism and like police states and, you know, corporate Reaganomics and everything and the dehumanization, how capitalism destroys us all. I didn't think that was going to really be conveyed in a RoboCop game. It would just be, shooting things is fun. It is basically shooting things is fun.
Yes.
However, the story and the tone and everything totally gets the Verhoeven satire, so I really enjoyed that too.
And we've got to talk about RoboCop just a little bit.
Yeah, so yeah, no, a year of pleasant gaming experience surprises in and amongst all the awful industry stuff.
I think, yeah, because in like a wider talking point, there's an assumption, like especially because of how much Disney have just strangled the life out of everything. It feels like if you're approaching something that has a brand or like a brand Bible behind it or whatever, it feels like that's super restrictive. Like it feels like a lot of the Star Wars TV shows felt very safe. Other than Andor, that felt like the only one that kind of had a real identity to
Tony Gilroy.
Yeah, yeah.
Director of Michael Keaton. Michael Clayton. Got it wrong.
Every single time with the Michael Clayton.
I was telling people to watch Michael Clayton
earlier on. Michael Clayton and let you know on social media.
Watch Michael Clayton.
Yeah, yeah. Don't know what it is. But that the whole approach to that idea of trying to make a franchise game made me think going into especially Star Wars Jedi Survivor that it would be super, super safe and it would just be quite boring and rote and whatever, and it could not be further from the truth. It did remind me that you can actually make brilliant games within those frameworks. And RoboCop in particular, I absolutely love. Like, things like such a... Like you said, if you pie chart it, it's like 70% shooting dudes' heads off, but then you've got 30% of like, you've got to do therapy sessions after each mission. You're trying to like dissect how much of Alex Murphy's still inside. You can choose whether you want people to refer to you as Alex or RoboCop. There's all that stuff in there that is a fundamental extension of the original movie. And it nails the tone so well. And then it has so much fun with 80s movie tropes. And then like the way that like gangsters are portrayed with their big stupid over the top hair. They've all got leather jackets on. Yeah. And it's very like how the youth were back in like every 80s movie, like whether it be Terminator or RoboCop or whatever. And then the fact that you can just throw motorbikes at people, you can just do all these ridiculous moves, which are really, really fun. I think that the upgrade system is great, way more in depth than I thought it was going to be. Like it's got a little bit of Deus Ex in there in terms of like you're noticing things in the level of like, oh, if I spec that way, I could unlock that safe, or I could go I could go that way, I could recharge my health using this thing or whatever. And I think I wasn't expecting any of that from a RoboCop game whatsoever. I think at the very, very end, I don't know if you agree with this, Ewan, I'll not do specific plot spoilers, but I thought the very end they kind of binned off a lot of the build they had. But like,
the only issue I had with the very ending is that they didn't do the Red Dead Redemption 2 route and they have you get the guy in a cutscene.
Like, yeah.
We deserve to have that moment of going...
Yeah.
Like, so that was the one annoying.
Reminds me of Army of Two, which is a weird call. But I remember at the end of Army of Two, they kill the person in a cutscene. I was like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. But yeah, RoboCop. And I guess, Si, what do you think of that like franchise approach? Like, does it... When you see... Because at the minute, we have all these things like Indiana Jones is still coming up. Like, does that give you hope or does that make you go, oh, that's going to be within a certain confines?
Yeah, actually, I am kind of optimistic about it at the moment because it's actually a point that I made. Funny enough, you use the word surprise. Like, I made a video on the best surprises of the year. Mm-hmm. And it was movie adaptations are actually something that you could potentially rely on again. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been a bunch of really good ones. RoboCop is one of them. Nobody expected Texas Chainsaw Massacre to be as good as it was.
That's a very good
because
one.
Because so many 4v1 horror things, especially adapted from existing franchises, it was just like, is this just going to be another one of the... And it was so true to the source material and that kind of feeling that you got out of it. It was just wonderful. So it seems like we might be getting to a point where these become a bit more like passion projects and less like let's milk the IP. Mm-hmm. And the RoboCop one, I've not played RoboCop, but what I've seen of it, it looks hilarious.
Yeah.
Like the gore is so on point and ridiculous.
There's literally a perk you can unlock which makes the gore even better.
That's great. And just the fact that before, and I seem to remember there was a RoboCop game in the 2000s that was just like the most generic thing ever. They just put RoboCop in it.
Did you play that where it was like Dredge versus Death, sorry.
It rings a bell. Like something Xbox. In the back of my head. Yeah, it was on the... Yes.
Actually, I'm thinking of Judge Dredd. What am I talking about?
Yeah, that's literally
there was
Judge
something
Dredd.
For a RoboCop on the original Xbox. Right, I'm sure of it, though. But the fact that this feels like RoboCop, like the combat's completely different to everything else because you're RoboCop. You don't need to hide behind chest-high walls.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
And it's like, it's with that as well, like you sort of realize how much you've taken certain control schemes and assumptions of character abilities from the genre. It's like, well, of course I'd have like a run slide or a crouch or like a jump button. And it's like, because you don't have those things, it frees up those button assignments, which you then get for a shield or a slow motion button or whatever. And then they give you those things over time. And it's like you get like a charge forward dash thing. You can grab anyone and throw them at other people. It's just like, it's so much fun.
While we're here, I should also give a shout out to my boys at Ilphonic for the Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed game, which is incredibly fun and came out last year. And it's been continually getting support still. Like that could have been one of these where it's like, we made a cheap Ghostbusters 4v1 and it gets 6 months of support. But like they have carried it on and on. They've just released it for PC and Switch with like a new story thing.
Nice.
It's great. Like,
we should say we're not sponsored by them.
We're not sponsored by them.
They've come strength to strength, though.
I think they did a Halloween game, or they did another 4v1 or something beforehand.
Yeah. So, well, because like, I feel like they originally did the Friday the 13th game.
Friday the 13th, that was it.
And then like Texas Chainsaw was, I think,
Gun
part of
Media.
Was Gun, okay, so same publisher. And then now you've got the Ghostbusters stuff. Then on the other side, you've got Teon doing Terminator Resistance. Now they've just done RoboCop.
Yep.
And they started on the Rambo game, which is the one to avoid.
Yeah.
But still, you've kind of got both these studios doing old school licensed stuff right, and doing games that obviously couldn't release at the time because of technology and everything, but maybe visions that certain creators had, now they're able to do them. Like I said, all around, that RoboCop game is so much, is a fully formed thing in a way that I never would have never would have expected.
I just need someone to look at like doing another Max Payne revival, but they make it a full John Woo thing, and they either do a Stranglehold sequel, or we go into like the Hard Target route, and we get Mullet, JCVD, jumping through glass and dual wielding Berettas.
I want more third person shooters. Like, you never get them anymore. Like, I want third person shooters where I have a melee option.
How hard would a third person Lethal Weapon co-op game be?
Yeah,
be so good. And then every time you kill someone, you get a saxophone going.
But I'm just like thinking about like post Max Payne, you had Stranglehold, you had Enter the Matrix. Like, give me acrobatic third person shooters. Dead to Rights was awesome. You can kick a dude's face. It was great. My next one is the idea that I just want to say gaming doesn't need Hollywood. I feel like the Game Awards hammered this home, and I want to talk about a couple of things about the integrity of the games industry and just how much the Game Awards steered into being seen by Hollywood. Now, me and Ewan talked about it a little bit on one of the podcasts we did last week, and I always feel like gaming's had this sort of inferiority complex where it's like, oh, gaming isn't really a medium until it has like, you know, fully voiced cutscenes and it has the motion capture stuff, and we have anything that Hollywood was doing before, and gaming isn't really seen as this credible medium until it can make you cry or it can do all these different things. And I love all that stuff, but the reason I love that stuff is because it can be added to the whole. And I kind of want to just spin this off into a general conversation about, like I said, the validity of the games themselves, and then maybe talk about the Game Awards and the way that stuff went, and the idea of awards versus trailers, and caring about the recognition or just caring about the next thing. What did either of you, I guess, start with Silent? What did you think of all the celebrity stuff in the Game Awards? I didn't necessarily notice it or care about it that much in the moment, but I get the people saying, like, look, the fact that you had, you know, Anthony Mackie and Simu Liu and all these different people coming out, and Timothy Chalamet, versus celebrating the creatives who actually made the games.
Yes.
That's one thing. And then the idea of, steering into Hollywood, like Hideo Kojima getting all buddy-buddy with Jordan Peele, and, like, his new Game OD is full of celebrities and all actors anyway. And that idea of, like, gaming in Hollywood shadow, which has been a thing for, like, decades at this point.
I agree. At the time, the sort of onstage performances of these guys wasn't a bad thing necessarily. Yeah. Anthony Mackie maybe aside, that was
default went, oh cool. I mean, I like all those people.
Anthony Mackie's bit was a little bit cringe for me,
right?
But
tell people to shut up.
Yeah, but it was trying to be a meme. Yeah, like, okay, get on with it. Anyway, but by the end of it, it did leave a bad taste because they got infinitely more time than anybody actually in the industry. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like the guy that went up there to accept, I don't know his name, the Larian Studios gentleman who went up there in his full armor. Yeah, got no time at all to talk about Game of the Year, Baldur's Gate 3, and instead we had Anthony Mackie, like you say, telling people to shut up for like what felt like five whole minutes.
That Sven guy as well, he just this morning, as we're recording this, did a 16-part tweet just saying this is what I wanted to say had more chance.
Yeah.
But
across the board, it is like, it's an interesting time because we just talked a little bit about superhero fatigue, I guess, and it seems like celebrities are now less looking in that direction. I want to worm my way into getting a big payday from a superhero film. Mm. Maybe video games are my next place to go. This is where all the money is. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe it's telling that that's part of it, and they're all... Some of them go out there. Matthew McConaughey say, basically, I don't know anything about video games. I'm not a gamer, but...
Yeah.
Well, you don't need to be a gamer necessarily, but it felt so, hey guys, I'm bigger than all of you.
Yeah, there was a whole thing where he came out and he was like, I didn't expect it to be this big or something. I was like, what do you think it was going to be? Like a little basement show?
This is where I publicly declare I don't like Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
I find him really obnoxious and annoying, and apparently he's really weird.
Okay. Yeah. I like him enough, but I guess I don't follow him that much.
But like harmlessly weird, I think. Mm. But like in those situations, it just kind of speaks volumes to the idea of the Game Awards not taking itself seriously and having to lower itself to be recognized by Hollywood.
Gonzo.
I'm Gonzo up there.
Like I'm a movie.
That's a long running thing.
Gonzo can go where Gonzo pleases. But like as someone who is a movie guy, first and foremost, I do find it embarrassing on gaming's behalf that this keeps happening. Mm-hmm. I think if you have a Game Award space, you need to be recognizing gaming people and being like, hey, this is why we're here.
Yeah.
I think in Kojima's case, it makes sense because that dude loves movies and all of his games are so heavily... Basically, his entire gaming career is indebted to the filmic medium. Like, you know, like you look at like Metal Gear Solid taking inspiration from stuff like Escape from New York.
A lot of anime.
You look at like, his tweets about movies in general. So in Kojima's case, it makes sense. I probably think he should just direct a film to get it out of his system. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know why he refuses to do this.
But in the other scenarios, I don't know, like I enjoy, like I can get away with having Hollywood, you know, I think it's good to have filmmaking contributions if you're aiming for a cinematic experience. But certainly from where I was sitting at the Game Awards, not that I was there, but in my couch at home, it very much came across as like, oh, we're just getting these guys because they're big names, and maybe we'll get slightly more. But anyone who's obsessed with Timothée Chalamet for Dune,
he's shooting rounds.
Like, well, no, I don't dislike Timothée Chalamet, right. But I think anyone who is Timothée Chalamet is primary fandom. I don't think is like particularly like going to be like, oh, I'm going to look at the Game Awards because Timothée Chalamet is there.
Right,
yeah, I'll probably see a few screen caps on Twitter and go, oh, my boy Timothy was at the Game Awards.
So
that's
random
cute.
When he was in, he was at Kojima. Studios, like he was. I assume he's being scanned in for Death Stranding 2 because they're like for Death Stranding 2. I imagine that Kojima's only gone wider in terms of the amount of faces he can get in.
Yeah.
Because the first game had, you know, everybody from Jordan Vogt Roberts to Conan O'Brien. It was just like why not get these people in? So yeah, I definitely agree with that. It was like this dude's so random. But yeah, it kind of all speaks to that idea of like gaming is only valid when it has the big movie celebrities in there, as opposed to building up our own gaming celebrities and doubling down on them.
It's just weird because like gaming makes so much money.
Yeah.
And like you don't necessarily need Hollywood's approval because you're a different medium. Like again, like you can have cinematic experiences, and so many games have been inspired by films. Like the most successful gaming franchise of all time owes its existence to films, and Grand Theft Auto that was entirely based on, you know, the House of Brothers kind of love for, you know, crime movies and action movies and old cinema. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. But I think there needs to be a general conversation there about like, well, are we subtly coding here that we think that only cinematic games are like the end result of this entire experiment?
Yes.
Are we saying that we think that games that aren't cinematic are less? Like, it's a really weird, it gives me the ick, and I wish that they would move away from that.
I love that conversation because I think that whole thing about, like a lot of people say The Last of Us is the best game of all time, or at the time it was like, oh my God, this is such a phenomenal video game. And it is, and I love it. But at the same time, a lot of those biggest moments come from the cutscenes, they come from the acting, they come from the performances. However, if I was going to, I would argue that stuff only lands because of the amount of time you fundamentally spend with character agency, controlling Joel with Ellie, and spending that time together, going on that journey together for about 20 hours or so, that it makes those moments land, and you need both. It was the thing I was mentioning before about you bring in the filmic parts and you add them onto the gameplay stuff.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But that, as a wider conversation, comes up all the time of like, oh, this is the best game ever because it made me cry, or this is the best game ever because of this cutscene moment, or it looks beautiful, or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but the core of the medium, like the gameplay side of it, the mechanical side of it, isn't as sky high as the rest of it.
I think it's weird. Like, I think in certain cases, like you look at like, I think Rockstar have the right approach here where they don't really do stunt celebrity casting.
Not
they
anymore.
They cast actors. I mean, they obviously did it back in the day, but it was never a case of like, you can tell immediately this is Joe Pantoliano because it's not Joe Pantoliano's face. Or
they specifically
it's
like said
Ray Liotta's. You can't really immediately tell that it's Ray Liotta's face in Vice City.
Super quick, like they specifically said after San Andreas that they were stopping doing that because people were only hearing the actor.
Yeah,
and not
like
the
Samuel
character.
Jackson obviously as well in San Andreas, but it's like a case of like now, like they do cast actors, but it's never a case of. We're hinging this on you recognizing an actor's face. Like, whereas with some like Cyberpunk 2077, where, and again, I love Keanu Reeves, but it's very much a case of, look, guys, we have Keanu Reeves, and now we have Idris Elba. We have Idris Elba too. Isn't that so cool? And it's kind of like, are you casting this person because you think they're good for your game and you couldn't find anyone else? Or are you just casting it because you want to have Idris Elba in your game? I don't know. It's a really weird one for me. And Elba not attending. Obviously, actors don't attend even the most prestigious awards ceremonies if they're busy, but it's a case of like, well, what are we doing here? Because I'm looking at like Phantom Liberty, I think it is. I've not played it. Just from looking on the outside in, it doesn't seem like it just looks like Idris Elba doing his thing.
Apparently it's great. I've not played it yet either. That example, Cyberpunk's fascinating because it was, I don't know how Keanu was having the game demoed to him. He was originally going to have a way smaller role in it, and apparently he was so up for doing more of it that Adam Bradowski, who was the project lead at the time, ostensibly gutted the whole project to make the whole thing around him, and then he became the Johnny Silverhand character, and it was a whole thing, which is one of the reasons that Cyberpunk was so off the rails for most of its development. And that Badowski guy was the guy that wanted it to be chasing GTA, and we're going to put it around Keanu Reeves, but GTA, we'll chase all these things, it'll make loads of money. And obviously it went very sideways. But that's interesting, that idea of like, hey, look, we have X person. Is that enough to get you in? And I think that like some of that stuff, I don't mind that. I don't think you need to wipe that out as a possibility. And I think that Keanu and Idris Elba both seem really solid in Cyberpunk, but it is interesting, that idea of like stunt casting for the sake of it.
It'd be like if like Rockstar.
It's what John Bernthal had in Ghost and Ghost Recon.
It'd be literally like if the GTA 6 trailer for Lucia, and I forget the dude's
Jason,
you literally had John Bernthal as Jason or whatever. And like, that was the whole thing. But you already invested in these people we don't really know. Like, I don't think many people knew who Roger Clark was, by and large, before Red Dead Redemption 2. Or Stephen Ogg, is it, who played Trevor in GTA 5? Like, people may have recognized them from, like, bit parts in different TV shows and films or whatever, but never, like, fully, like, oh, this is this person, and this is, like, this is the thing for me. I feel like maybe we imprint better on unknown actors who are, you know, physical performers at the same time, rather than looking at, oh, I'm just talking to Idris Elba. And it was like that with Call of Duty as well, when they had, like, Kit Harington in Infinite Warfare.
I was about to say, we're that reaching that of it, sort of peak now where you're getting, like, limited returns from it every time, because all major trailers now seem to end with, like, a helmet coming off and being like, oh, it's that actor. You know, get back to Matthew McConaughey. It was like, we're going to sell this. That's the first time you see this game, and the first thing you see of it is, we have this actor. Right, it's front and center stage. That's how they revealed this game. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely becoming a breaking point of the trend, I think, where every major game has at least one major actor.
Didn't Callisto Protocol have Josh Duhamel as like?
Yeah, yeah, quite a few.
I'm waiting to see who's in Elder Scrolls 6.
Oh god,
because it's going to be
got here again. Maybe Chris Pratt,
Sean Bean, or something.
They won't have their face though. I think that's the main thing. I think if you can, I think voice acting in itself, there's that kind of when you scan someone's face and it becomes a facial catch performance. It's a different thing to just having the voice.
I think I think the thing that's interesting. I'll round my point off by saying that idea of like, look how many actors are dying to get into this stuff might be a good segue into your next point, Si, is like the fact that there are so many actors sort of chomping at the bit to get into these things in a way that they weren't even 5 or 10 years ago, to me speaks to how big the industry's got and how important gaming is, and how that inferiority complex just doesn't need to be there anymore. Yeah. Like, we've proven ourselves at this point.
But is it a case of actors dying to get in, or is it the agent saying, I have an easy 6 weeks of work for you and you can come in and do this facial capture thing and you'll do all your recording sessions really quickly and then you'll get paid a hefty amount and then you can go and work on the stuff you actually want to.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if your next point, Si, was the adaptation thing, but we can talk about that, because I think it's the fact that it's your point, but like the idea that adaptations are the next thing anyway.
For sure. It's an interesting time because it runs both ways completely. Like, everyone talked about the curse of video game films for so long and whether on, you know, it's still conversation.
They didn't even see Silent Hill 1, did they? They just, they kept saying
it's
after that.
It's an okay film.
Detective Pikachu, they just kept going.
But there's obviously the talk about whether or not the curse is broken. And wherever you, where you might land on that.
Broken years ago.
Exactly, right. But whether it's broken years ago or not, this year has absolutely been one of the best years for video game adaptations. The Last of Us was great, as I said before, because you don't have to play the gameplay part. It's just the good, it's just the good bits. The Mario movie.
I love the Mario
Gangbusters,
movie so much.
Fantastic. Obviously, it was great fun. Castlevania, not the best season of the show so far, I think it's fair to say, but it's...
The fact that it exists, though, you've got 4 seasons of the original.
It's still going,
and
they did a bit of a reboot with it as well, and that's kind of neat that they've carried on and they see the success in that. You've just had Onimusha come out sort of recently, which I don't know how well that's landed. Same with Gran Turismo, seems to be a bit of mixed reviews, but some people seem to be enjoying it. Twisted Metal just got renewed for season 2. That's quite a lot of adaptations going on right now.
Like, I feel like it speaks to an overall mentality that, like, I mean, we just mentioned the idea that, like, you know, the Disney approach to Marvel and Star Wars, that those things feel exhausted. I feel like the next pool of franchises, the next pool of IPs is gaming.
It's definitely coming. There's a bunch of stuff in the works, isn't there? We've got Fallout coming soon, which looks really good.
God of War as well.
Pleasantly surprised.
Genuinely.
About that. I mean, it's got the Walton Goggins seal of approval, so for sure.
The Gog stamp.
We might finally get the Borderlands movie, which probably will be terrible.
That's meant to be terrible.
Yeah, it's probably going to be bad.
I've seen the set photos of Kate Blanchett just looking completely done. Like,
I'll be amazed.
Shot
if that
like
thing
6 years
together.
Ago or something.
Yeah,
stupid,
it was like Eli
it?
Roth directing.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh god. There's a God of War TV show as well. Like,
yes,
I must have got that.
Yeah. Devil May Cry.
For the anime side,
obviously, Nintendo are now doing Zelda and who knows what else after that. So there's a lot of stuff to come. But you know, and in years past, you would look at all of this and be like, this is going to be terrible. This is please don't do this to the thing I love. Uh-huh. Now there is a much more markedly different opinion on, oh, okay.
They've had way more wins in the last few years than they have in the last 2 decades, like by far.
I still think if you have something like Tom Holland's Uncharted that you guys aren't out of the woods yet.
I like Tom Holland's Uncharted.
I haven't seen it.
That was your bones trying to leave your body and how bad that take was. I don't know if anyone heard the wrist snap then. That's Scott's skeleton leaping out of fear.
Chemically rejecting that opinion. I didn't mind that movie at all. I thought he was quite a nice little young Drake. That was all right.
Hey, do you think Sully talks like this? He's like, you know, my
whole
book.
That's why you get Tom Holland, but I thought that final set piece is pretty inventive. Two little ships.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. It looked really bad.
You don't even see it.
Well, why would I want to watch Tom Holland's Uncharted, man? Anyone who played the Uncharted games and is happy and is saying, I'm seriously happy with Tom Holland playing Nathan Drake.
You got to watch him.
Lying to themselves.
You got to watch him.
No.
He's all right.
No, Scott.
Not too bad.
No. Bad.
No, he's not too bad. But but that whole thing of Sony doubling down, obviously they opened the, I forget what they call it, PlayStation Studios, I think, is the new logo.
Yeah.
And then you have Gran Turismo, you have Uncharted. And they want to do
Horizon coming.
Yeah, Horizon's coming, which
I am. Admittedly, I just said you could be more positive about it. That I don't know how to feel about. But
I think the overall idea, though, that it's like, okay, we've rinsed comics dry. We're still going to keep doing them, but what else can we go for? Okay, let's do gaming. We have the technology to do a lot of visual effects that can match some of the things that are happening in the games. There's a Metal Gear Solid movie as well, like Jordan Vogt Roberts' Metal Gear Solid movie.
Is that
years
ever
ago.
Happening?
I have no. He reckons he finished the script a few years ago, but it's like he couldn't get someone to put it through or something. But yeah, overall, that idea of like, what what's the next group of fans that we can target? And Sonic blowing up so much is a whole thing. Like Sonic 2 is ludicrously successful.
Sonic 3 on the way.
Yeah. Put the Sonic and Mario success in a different bracket to these because they are kids' movies. They are kids' animated movies.
Oh, I don't know.
And kids' family movies in Sonic's cases. Yeah. I don't think they're catering specifically towards a video game fandom. They don't have a lot of fan service in them, but I think they're still fundamentally, these are like, to a general audience, they were successful because they were kids' things. We recognize Mario as a kids' thing, and then we can have a kids' movie.
Oh, but they get the wider age brackets in a way that like the Minions didn't do.
I think the important thing is that they figured out that that's how to market them. Do what they did in 1993 with the Mario Brothers, which I love that movie, by the way.
So you came from Bob Hoskins. I'll defend Bob Hoskins.
I love that film. But they obviously went, no, this is what we need to do to make money. And I think it's figuring out how to show this in the right way. It just like, I think this week, a trailer for the season 2 of Halo came out.
Yeah.
And all the comments were, this is what season 1 should have been. This is more I want. So, you know.
Halo's another one that I did not expect to go anywhere near as well as it, go down as well as it did. Like
people hate that first season.
The fans did. That thing blew up like loads though. Like for the mainstream audience. Like,
I've not seen it.
There's a Halo cookbook now. Like there's a whole thing where Halo is bigger than it used to be. And for the average consumer, the average watcher of Paramount Plus apparently. You know, apparently the viewer figures were ridiculous for that thing. Compared to what they were expected to be. As opposed to, Halo fans were like, that's not what his face should look like. Like, if you want to see a face at all, and Cortana looks ridiculous.
You don't want to see John 117 getting down?
No, I don't. Not unless it's with his suit, which is as lore appropriate. But Halo 2 coming back is another one for season 2. But overall, I feel like there is that push into how many different things can we adapt. I feel like it's a lot of money men going like, oh my God, they're all right here. We can do all of these.
I will say, it's not technically a video game adaptation because it was a book beforehand, but Chad Stahelski and Michael B. Jordan are doing a Rainbow Six movie.
Are they?
Yes, which I'm really excited about because I love Chad Stahelski and love the Tom Clancy and the Tom Clancy books and stuff and like adaptations are really cool. So if, I think maybe given the video gaminess of John Wick Chapter 4, maybe old Chad's looking at Rainbow Six Vegas and Rainbow Six Vegas 2 and it's like, how can we get those vibes?
Well, you've got like, you know, Ubisoft doubled down until they messed it up, but they doubled down on the Tom Clancy stuff overall. Like there was the whole thing about how they renewed they obviously had the license for a while anyway, and then they after he passed away like a few years ago and they doubled down on that
10
stuff.
10 years ago.
Right. I remember them just saying like, we're going to keep going. The Tom Clancy name will keep going. And then we had Wildlands and we had, the Ghost Recon and
Division.
And the Division. They invented some new IP and like there was that whole conversation around, is it the kind of IPs that he would have put together if he was still alive and everything. They just seem to keeping going with that name. It's like, we can have a whole Tom Clancy movie verse and we can tie all these things together after 2 Division movies and everything. You and your second point, please.
I've already forgotten it. This is absolutely terrible. I kind of wanted to. We've already kind of encompassed different talking points that I was going to mention. We mentioned like the ballooning, having the conversations about like ballooning video game development and is it sustainable. We mentioned the layoffs. Mentioned like the year of like video game comebacks and stuff and like film adaptations and things.
If we've touched on enough points, that is more.
I think we have. The only other thing that I could really contribute is that I'm really happy that I still find enjoyment in Hell Let Loose and that I can still play that and have a fun old time.
That's what your entry on the Game of the Year video would have been if you weren't a little man.
I'm looking forward to drastically the return of GTA. I think GTA is an overall thing that is going to be such a good thing for the industry. I'm very much excited to see a new Rockstar game. It's been a very weird year in terms of like waiting for them to do something and like the leaks and stuff.
I was going to say it's the meme.
Yeah. And like how GTA Online just continues to lumber on and stuff and now that we're actually going to get this, it is huge. The trailer thing was a big moment. Can't believe we have to wait another 2 years to get to it. But IGN actually uploaded the other day a supercut of every single GTA trailer. Going from the first game through to the most recent one. And I've got to tell you, GTA 5's marketing campaign was so good. I didn't realize how nostalgic I was for that game until I was like watching all the different trailers. I was sleepwalking by the, it's like the Chain Gang in 1974 came on. It's like,
That whole way they rolled that stuff out, like they always have such a stylistic mindset when they put those trailers out. I'll always remember GTA 3 Vice City and San Andreas' trailers, especially Vice City with Iran. It was on the second trailer because the original one had that escalating sound effect thing. It's from a song. That like
thing, and that was great. And then, but then when they finally started putting, they put Flock of Seagulls, Iran in the background for the second trailer. That was the one where it was. Do you remember that era of game trailers where it was just here's character shooting rifle, and they just panned the camera past them? And Metal Gear had it for a bit. It was great, and it's just like the same when you watch those old GTA trailers. But that worked so well at the time. But yeah, like the way that GTA's came back, I loved that they put like a storytelling foot forward, that it wasn't leading with GTA Online. It was like, no.
So excited.
Yeah, and I'm like, here's some characters. They're really well-rounded. Like they, you know, I mean, obviously we haven't got the Jason trailer yet, which is the rumored follow-up trailer, but it'll be sometime next year at this point. But I'm already in love with Lucia, and I love the way that stuff's already coming together. I wanted to just super quick touch on, as my final point, just that idea of game preservation, which I think we've talked about a little bit before, but I'm mainly using this as a way to shout out the Atari collections, which I've mentioned before, but we can segue into this like a general approach to like how much old stuff do either of you tend to play, and do you think that stuff matters? I feel like a lot of the across the pandemic, a lot of people rediscovered their old libraries because there wasn't that much coming out, and they doubled down on, you know, like original Xbox, original PS2, 360 games, and going back to things, as opposed to chasing the newest, shiniest thing all the time. And it kind of ties into where budget should be placed. Because you have on the Sony side, I know Jim Ryan's stepping down next year, but he was the guy talking about, you know, people don't care about old games. Mm. And he, over time, he tried to clarify it, saying that comparing the original Gran Turismo to the newest one, why would anybody want to play the original? He reckons that was his original point. Fair enough. But,
still a bad point.
Still, yeah,
sorry,
exactly.
Still it's a like, bad
the
point.
Newer Gran Turismo's don't have that banging early 2000s soundtrack.
They do not give me feeder any day. But yeah, so I think that was something that across the pandemic, I was like, okay, I'm reinvesting in older stuff. Not that I didn't play old games, but how much do you want that old archival stuff to be available, and how much do you tend to go back to stuff? Because I try and have a mix, I think, at this point.
This is a very passionate point for me, to be honest. Game preservation is something that I deeply care about. Uh-huh. I think it's disgusting that we're in the state that we're in. And I know I've said it before where, you know, some rubbish movie from the 1940s can get a Blu-ray release and...
Excuse me? I didn't some name, rubbish
I'm
movie?
Not naming any names. Just there are some films out there that like have had a million releases every 5 years. They do another 4K restoration, and then you've got video games that are, you know, called iconic that haven't been left out of their original.
The greatest filmic decade ever.
It's because movies are more important, so clearly.
Obviously.
That's the industry.
It's terrible. It's a terrible state of affairs, and I do think that people care about it. Probably not as much as they perhaps should, but I think there wouldn't be as many classic collections releasing in the last years if people didn't buy them.
Yeah,
like Mega
true.
Man has done like four of them at this point, I think, and there's a whole bunch of them coming out. So I guess that's probably a good thing. And you can say that that's still kind of steeped in capitalism. Oh, we can make money off people by reselling them games they already own, but it is important that those games are available at least in some form. Everybody poo-pooed Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1's performance issues or whatever else. And to be fair, rightfully that, I think the...
Lots of removed stuff from that as well. Same with the GTA.
Well, yes, there's that as well, but that's obviously like a legal thing that they've got. But I think on the... I don't know how true this is, but I've heard that some of the games are on the physical version and the rest you have to download from a store.
You do on the Switch
codes
one,
okay, but that's kind of like, that's not great either, is it, to be honest, because those things can just vanish off a store. We all know this, we're going through this right now. But you know, the rise of classic collections is good. There just needs to be a lot more of it. I'm all about it, and there needs to be, I don't know what it is that needs to be done, but something needs to be done.
You and your thoughts. I want to shout a specific thing out after this.
I mean, I think this is something that needs more attention driven towards it, because you're right to mention film preservation, because the movie industry, by and large, even though there has been so many howlers over the years, you know, most of the silent movies, like loads of them, were lost in like vault fires in like the 1930s, 1920s, 1940s. And there are some films that were made even after that point that have been like lost in vault accidents or haven't been preserved properly. By and large, movies are much better at doing this now. We have the Library of Congress like stores stuff that's like culturally important and stuff like that. Like you say, we do get new restorations, which when done right are really good, not True Lies. And you know, that is an important thing, because I think the issue that we're getting at the minute now is that because we've got a situation where on PlayStation, which is the most widely played library of consoles, you can't bring across stuff from the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, through to your PlayStation 4. Well, you can on the PlayStation 4, but you can't bring the aforementioned consoles over to your PS5. And then you have the remasters, the things you can download, which always don't always pan out. We have an issue here where like gaming has learned weird lessons from the comic book industry stuff, where we're now getting things like, oh, you want to actually like play like an old game that used to cost like a tenner 10 years ago? Well, tough luck, because some idiot nerd has put it in a slab and has graded it, and now we're gonna have to pay like several hundred pounds to play it or whatever.
Right.
That stuff is disgusting. It's putrid. It should not be. The fact that it's like found a home in this space is ridiculous. And this is speaking.
How do you mean put
it
in a slab?
Because when you slap something, it's. Have you not seen this?
No.
So people are literally putting games cartridges and boxes in like plastic like slabs so they can be graded. So if your game has a higher grade of preservation, it means it's got less like wear and tear. If you wanted to play the Futurama game, because I looked this up, by the way, I was quite interested in maybe being like, oh, maybe I'll like replay that kind of mid Futurama game from like 2003 or whatever.
Art style was
cool. I went on eBay. There was you have to pay over £40 to get a pre-owned version of that game now, which again, I get it, you know, scarcity, demand, whatever. There was some guy on there selling a slabbed version of the Futurama game for, I think it was like several hundred pounds.
Right.
It might have even been more. It might have been close to like the four-figure number.
Right.
Which is just ridiculous to me. I absolutely hate that. And it's a point that we need to, I think like people need to boycott that practice, first of all. This is kind of a separate conversation, but in terms of video game preservation overall, yes, we need more of it. The games companies need to be better at it. There is money to be made there. There's nothing to be ashamed about in doing that. I personally just need, I've spoken to you years, like I need to get an Xbox One or Series X
so I can
basically play my 360 and OG Xbox library together.
You should get a Series
because
oh no.
My OG Xbox.
I was just Series S there,
my OG Xbox is still chugging. I can still play stuff on that. I've got a nice little HDMI SCART conversion cable that goes in. It's a little bit blurry at times, but it looks great, I can play it. It's fun. If I want to play Batman Vengeance on a Saturday morning and I'm feeling in that way, I can do that.
That's I love having like a little retro corner. Like I got my N64, I've got the HDMI upscaler thing. And yeah, if I want to play FIFA 95, I can.
Yeah.
And I was Star Wars Rogue Squadron or whatever.
Get Robbie Fowler in the goals.
Yeah. And it's like, but that's the thing. It's like everyone's had to go out of their way to set up their own little retro corners, which is, there's something really satisfying about putting that stuff together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it does, but at the same time, it's almost accepted or expected in the gaming industry that most legacy stuff won't be available past one generation.
It's so ridiculous, because could you imagine, like, the best thing about like film is that if you have a Blu-ray or a 4K player now, you can play a DVD that was manufactured in 1999 with no issues. It won't look that great because it's a very old, you know, kind of, it's not got like a high bitrate or whatever. It's not like got as much data in a Blu-ray or 4K disc, but you can still fundamentally play it. If you own that disc from 25 years ago, you can still play whereas with gaming you have so many different hoops to jump through, and this, the longer it gets put off, the longer that PlayStation doesn't address this. And I think it is primarily a PlayStation issue, because obviously Xbox needs to expand its library and make sure that it has more backwards compatible stuff too, but the longer PlayStation puts this issue off, the longer term I feel like this is going to do more damage to
backwards compatibility. Is the spine of the issue, isn't it? Like ever since they started releasing consoles that were vaguely backwards compatible or not at all, it was like, well, this is going to be a long term problem.
Yeah,
and you're not accounting for that
with Xbox as well, where when the Xbox One launched, it was like, oh, we're not doing backwards compatibility and everything fundamentally runs through the Kinect and that's the way that it's going to be. And then obviously that thing didn't sell at all, and they were like, oh god, sorry, right, no, we figured it out somehow. And if you watch, there's a really good documentary that Xbox themselves put out where it's just very honest about how many mistakes they made, interviews with a lot of the original staff who weren't there anymore, about that whole period and how, what they were aiming for, what they messed up. And they talk about how to get that working, they had to get the Xbox One to emulate either an original Xbox or a 360 inside the Xbox One hardware so that the console... it thinks it's running like it runs a fake console inside itself, and which is some really cool technical wizardry.
Should have always been the way.
Yeah,
sorry,
exactly.
That should just be standard.
And it's like their standard disc sizes for the last 20 plus years as well. Like there is a way for a laser disc thing to, you know, a reader to recognize what that disc is and do something with it, even if the solution is downloading another file, which is what the Xbox 360 solution was, where you would just download a version of it. It was just using the disc to verify the purchase. The reason I wanted to mention this is because, and I've mentioned this loads on podcasts, but it's because I love the whole approach. It's what Digital Extremes are doing with Atari's back catalog. And it's a whole thing with, and we're not sponsored by it at all, but I just love it. It's the Atari like sort of restoration project that they've got going on, where they've done a lot of remakes of their iconic games. They've put them out. They're called recharged versions of those games. But they also have the Atari 50 collection, which came out last year, which was like a sit down, you know, talking heads version of
all those old games. So they talk about the original creators, and then they let you play versions of the games as they were in development, so you get to the version that released. They have all the notes that were made that were passed between the devs and everything. I love that stuff. Like, it's all scanned in and everything. It's presented really, really well. So they walk you through 50 years worth of Atari. I love that thing. And then that was last year. And then this year, they did The Making of Karateka, which is like a specific... They've started a whole series where they're spotlighting specific creators. So they did one on Jordan Mechner, who would make Prince of Persia, but he did a game called Karateka back in the day, which was the first rotoscoped game. And the upcoming one is on Jeff Minter, who's called Yak. He's the guy that did like Tempest and a lot of more over-the-top out-there games. Okay. And so they're doing... It's going to be next year, but they're spotlighting him and interviewing him and going through all of his early work. And it's like, if you care about gaming at all and you care about the 70s gaming scene where it was very... it's obviously romanticized looking back, but it was very just, here's some soldering irons and some diodes.
Give
and I can,
me a soldering iron and a diode.
And I'll make
I'm
it work.
Make it.
And like, you know, making a character appear and those original steps that led to the building of genres. I adore that stuff. And I love that there's a specific publisher-developer combo spotlighting it in one of the best ways possible. Like, if you care about video game preservation, you know, because like I said, all those original games are made available in those collections as well. It's just the best thing. And I was going to do a whole video on it, but then I got ill and I haven't done it. But I just want to shout that stuff out. I think that is the best way to do making old games available again. And I would love if Nintendo, Rockstar, Ubisoft, Konami, whatever, you know, sit the original Castlevania team down, the Mega Man team, the Street Fighter team, the Resident Evil teams, and play those prototypes. Resident Evil 4, there are tons of prototypes that we could play for that.
That's another thing I forgot to mention. A lot of movie preservation and restoration is done by auteurs. The reason why we have so many of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger's movies from the 40s by the Archers still, you know, in HD now, and the fact they still exist is down to Martin Scorsese and Thelma Shoemaker. Like, that's individual people kind of going through this, well, basically... putting in their own forceful changes through the system to get these things out there. I don't think gaming has those figureheads that are as interested in doing that in a way to maybe push through and be like, these are things worth doing. That's a really good project you mentioned. There's one thing that just jumped out to me there. It's like, a lot of it is like, sometimes it is just individual artists who passionate about the subject matter and the history, who want to make sure that it's preserved for future generations.
It's also, I mean, there's no way that, you know, Atari are making bank on selling Yars Revenge in 2023. Like, it's just, I mean, I'm buying those things. And I think that, like, obviously there's a whole bunch of people who were there at the beginning, but it's not going to be anywhere near the money of a Last of Us 2 remastered or something. But to some degree, the conversation that we just had is that idea of the right thing to do and making gaming history playable, and seeing where these genres came from and these gameplay mechanics came from, which is just fascinating. And especially when it's all controllable, where the person's talking about it and then you play what they're talking about. I just think that's such a cool idea, and I want to see way more of that. That's my final point. Si, I think you have one more point, but you might not.
We don't need to harp on about this because it's kind of ending on a nice
harp,
note.
My friend.
All right, okay, that's fine. You know, 2023, one of the best years for games in quite a while. Also one of the worst.
Kind of good, kind of bad.
Yeah, lots of poopy stuff this year. Yeah, lots of borderline nigh on illegal stuff, as far as I'm concerned.
The day before would...
That's the prime example, isn't it? Where it's like, here's a game that we've told you is one thing, it releases, it's another, and now, whoops, we're out of business. Thanks for your money, bye. We're not going to bother supporting this. Like
the highs were higher, the lows were
really low.
North Haverbrook, where have I heard that before?
It's exactly that. And they just hits keep on coming with that. Like, we did a worst games of the year list, and then after it came out, more worst games came out. Like, it's just unbelievable the amount of times this year where it's like, wow, they couldn't possibly sink any lower than this. We had Gollum, and then we went down to Kong, and it just
Red
kept getting worse.
There too.
Yeah, your Stray Kong. Souls, and there was lots of really, really bad stuff that probably shouldn't have been allowed to happen.
Well, that's the wider conversation. Me and you talked about this a little bit when the day before stuff was breaking, that idea of how much do you expect storefronts or anybody taking sponsorship money to vet the thing that they're showcasing. And it's like, obviously we've done sponsorships in the past, and we're not going out there trying to play the game before. It's very nigh on impossible to be able to do, but at the same time, like we said, the lows were lower than ever this year, and the likes of Game Mill are the publisher that are putting out Kong Skull Island.
Can't get over that name.
They're literally cranking things out. I can't think who did the anonymous interviews with the developers who worked on those projects, but they talked about the reality of they get 1 year to turn it around. It's a very specific budget, and it is literally a game mill. It's just churning it over. over. The Avatar game this year was a terrible release. That's another game mill game. And there was something else, but it's a lot of those seeing the license cashing in and just turning it over. And in regards to the day before, that was mostly put together by volunteers who, according to various writers, were paid in free codes and merchandise or something. They weren't even given money. So it's like, exciting. It only gets worse for them. But it is interesting, that idea of the bar of quality. When you think about, when I think about other mediums, I can't think of any albums from notable artists that release with glitches or bugs or, you know, recording issues. I can't think of that many movies that release buggy. Like, you know, like the...
I haven't bought a book and be like, don't worry, we'll give you the rest of the pages when I open it up and there's only three pages in it.
Yeah, whereas in gaming, we've had that for years, and obviously that kicked in so much more on the PS4, Xbox One generation from 2013 onwards. But it's not something that we've escaped. It's almost par for the course. If someone's getting into gaming now, there's a level of, like, it might not work on day one that you just have to weirdly accept. And it's so stupid.
I hate that a lot of people are just like, well, just don't worry, I've only just come out. It's like, we should come out as a finished product.
I'm still paying the money.
I don't
want
to be old
one.
But like, come on, that's the way it used to work.
That's what's so fascinating is, like, is the next generation that's coming up, because they've had to put up with patches and microtransactions that is used to it. And I need to drill down on where I heard this, but I was either talking to someone who was a game dev, or I read a game dev thing. Of course, the last couple of weeks we talked about the idea of releasing games intentionally broken to look at the fan feedback, to treat that as an early access period fix it later, because then you know exactly what to fix. And I feel like we've seen various versions of that across the last decade anyway, like since Steam brought Greenlight in, you get like, okay, is it chippable? Right, chip that version of it and we'll see what happens.
Remember when we had demos?
Yeah. It's the thing. Never is like with again. Demos, some studios do them really well. Capcom are really, really good at them.
Yeah.
Square Enix, surprisingly, for as many mistakes as they make, are phenomenal with demos. They put a 10-hour version of the Octopath Traveler demo out. And same with Triangle Strategy, where they give you the full game for like a couple of hours, and then you upgrade to the full one if you want to keep going, which is the way to do it. Like, I think everyone should have that. But yeah, you and thoughts on the breadth of quality in 2023?
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's one of those where even the flagship franchises are falling behind here. Like, as much as you want to say that Call of Duty is a lazy franchise, like, I'm struggling to recall a massively buggy release from them or whatever. And just looking at the kind of the general state of that game's campaign, the single player, and how rushed that was and how transparently money grubby it felt to
mine from the multiplayer maps.
Yeah, it's just it's weird. I forgot. I actually did have another point that I was going to bring up very quickly. 2023, the continuing year of, you know, going into nostalgia and stuff. Call of Duty is terrible. The amount of times I have to put up with that stupid Eminem advert where it's that Twitch streamer then going, oh, guys, you need to see this. And it's then like basically hinging the reality, like the nostalgia of this entire game's success, being like, hey, remember when you had fun times in Modern Warfare 2 in 2009? Well, it's back in POG form. I'm just like, shut up, go away, make something new. It just comes across as really cowardly.
Yeah.
And I'm really not a big fan of it. And I want like I'm cool with degrees of video game nostalgia. Like, we wouldn't be playing old games if we weren't nostalgic for them. But I'm also kind of sick of just like, well, we have nothing new to contribute to this franchise, so let's just hinge its entire existence on classic vibes. Like, I hate
it's
that.
Very like that the meme of like when the brand gets involved and brand steps in and just says, this thing was cool, right, guys? And we go, we're okay now, to be honest. We've had our moment when it was just us. But there's ways to do it. But yeah, I feel like overall, obviously 2023, the highs were super high. There are many, many games that are, I'm just glad they exist, like Baldur's Gate 3.
For sure.
But it doesn't overlook the reality of the bodies that put them together and the fact that a lot of people, especially at Christmas time, sadly don't have those jobs anymore. So it is worth just mentioning like the amount of layoffs and the how wide that spectrum's got in regards of production quality or release quality. The likes of Kong Skull Island and the Avatar game, I don't think are ever going to get there. The day before has already been delisted. The company shut down and changed their name. So they're just...
That's what I mean about nigh on illegal.
Yeah, literally. I want more, you know, like deep dives into what the hell happened with that whole thing. Because they're saying it was a 5-year development cycle, but then a lot of the assets have been dated to the last couple of years. So it seems like they just threw something together once the game took off a bit more. So there is that. But yeah, 2023 has been a hell of a time. And so is the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Cy White.
Thank you.
And joined by you in person.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you later in the year, if not next year. Have a lovely holiday and we'll catch you soon. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.